You are in fellowship here now, and let's continue on. Ready to move on now with verse 20. And as they were passing by in the morning, they saw the fig tree withered from the roots. They supplied up, which is fine, but that the up is not there in the text. But that obviously is the way it would have had to go. So, and you got a chi here, typically not being translated. Paraporuomai, P-A-R-A-P-O-R-E-U-O-M-A-I. This means to proceed. Para, alongside. So to pass by, to move along some fixed reference point. Early in the morning is proi, adverb, P-R-O-I. The early part of the morning, this is after it's light, but it's still very early in the day. And essentially, of course, this is the earliest part of the morning because basically the way they divided the night watches, the last night watch ended at 6 in the morning. And that would be about the time the sun was coming up. So because he didn't designate this as one of the watches, it tells you that it was already daylight, but it was still real early. They saw, and here the context would seem to dictate only Jesus and the 12, there's no indication that there are groups traveling with them at this point. Not to say they wouldn't be joined by people on the road if they were, because the pilgrims are still flooding into Jerusalem at this point. They saw is idon, aorist indicative. The suke, hey suke, the fig tree, definite article, S-U-K-E. The fig tree, and obviously the definite article here is earlier reference. That's why he uses it. The fig tree from the day before. The word zeirino, the verb z-e-r-a-i-n-o, means literally to dry up or dry out. They translated it by the term withered. It's often used in terms of water sources drying up. It's also used in like terms of paralysis when you're talking about human people. They had a paralytic hand or whatever it was. They would use this term to describe that. And then from the roots, preposition ek plus riza, H-R-I-Z-A. And that means the roots or root system of a plant. And being reminded, Peter said to him, Rabbi, look, the fig tree which you cursed has withered. Again, a chi that's not translated. Having been reminded literally, aorist passive participle, of anamnesko, A-N-A-M-I-M-N-E-S-K-O. Mnemnesko means to remember. Ana means again, to call to mind again, literally. 6 times this word is used, this verb. Passively, it means to be reminded of something, but there's also a sense in which it's almost deponent because it can be used just to mean to remember or recall on your own. The Peter, O Petros. And again, Peter, we see, what, all of them noticed it. It's not as though they all didn't notice it, they did. But Peter is once again the spokesman for the group. He may have been the first to notice it. We don't know. Peter says, literally present active indicative and historical present, says to him, Jesus, Rabbi, or Rabbi, the term there, just transliterated over basically from the Aramaic. Rabbi, behold, conjunction here, ide, I-D-E, also goes under the form idu. Means look, behold, and it's an exclamation of excitement to pay attention to something. Behold the fig tree, which, suke again, relative pronoun host, which you cursed. Now, kataraomai, K-A-T-A-R-A-O-M-A-I, is only used 5 times. Now, this is the language of cursing or execrating. And this is essentially calling down a judgment from a deity on something or somebody. It's asking God. Now, from what we have in Mark, there's no indication that, quote, Jesus cursed it, but this is the way Peter viewed it, and probably the other 12 did. And Jesus doesn't correct Peter here. He doesn't say, no, that wasn't a curse I uttered. But essentially, Peter's interpreting Jesus' actions because of what's happened to the fig tree. So this means to invoke deity to cause harm to a person or thing. It is praying down judgment on people. It's the idea of an imprecatory sort of approach in prayer. And again, Jesus doesn't correct Peter. He doesn't say, I didn't curse it. he would just go ahead and move it and use it as an opportunity, as we will see, to continue to teach these men, to continue to drive home his points that he's made probably 50 times in the last 6 months about the necessity of these things. I mean, he taught this stuff over and over and over again, under various settings, because you had different crowds. So the fig tree, which you cursed, perfect passive indicative, has dried up. In other words, it's dried up to the point where it's dead. It's a perfect tense. I mean, this gives you the state of it. Has completely been withered. And the passive, again, the outside agent, who withered it? Well, no doubt, God did. That's the whole point. Well, point one here, exposition of verses 20 and 21. Now, Mark now moves to the events of Wednesday. The first of which involved rising and leaving from Bethany relatively early in the morning. It seems that Jesus was an early riser. I mean, there's evidence from what we've seen in Mark. Obviously, he would get up early in some cases to go be alone and pray, as he was going to have to confront the events of that day and all the days that he had to deal with. He would get up and appears to arise fairly early in the morning a lot. And so one of the things here, it's early enough where they don't eat breakfast. And as we know, this was very similar to what had happened the previous day. He's on the way from Bethany into Jerusalem, and he gets hungry. Well, they hadn't eaten breakfast is the issue, and no doubt they hadn't here either, although we're not told specifically. Well, two, the phrase in the morning is a reflection of the adverb prohi, which deals with the earliest part of the morning after the sun has begun to rise. It was the time after the fourth watch. The four watches were divided, essentially the night watches, 6 to 9, 9 to 12, 12 to 3, and 3 to 6. So it was pretty easy to keep track of those. A three-hour watch, and then that ended, all the watches ended at 6 a.m. Three, thus Jesus and the apostles leave Bethany, which was about 2 miles from Jerusalem, and make the trip along the same route they had taken the previous 2 days. Four, some have wondered why the apostles had not seen that the fig tree had withered. But that is readily explained by the fact that the return trip to Bethany was made after sundown on Tuesday. And so when evening came, the sense of this here, because it's not qualified, it would appear to be later evening, that the sun was declining but hadn't set. But by the time they get out of the city and are making the trip back, and we don't really know how far this fig tree was from Jerusalem. I mean, it could have been halfway on the two-mile trip. It could have been very close to Bethany. Again, some of that is hard to tell because of not knowing where Bethphage is, or exactly where it was supposed to be, how they located it. Well, the fact was they didn't see it on the way home because it was dark, or almost dark. Dark enough to where you couldn't tell that that had happened. And, you know, you could see the tree, no doubt. I mean, they could probably see the outline of it, but there's no indication they could see it fully. So that was pretty easy. Someone said, well, why didn't they notice it on the way back? Well, it was dark. It's not hard to figure out, I don't think. Well, five, Matthew's account focuses on the fact that the fig tree began to die immediately, emphasizing the power and authority of Jesus' words, while Mark focuses on the complete visible nature of its destruction. Again, if you read Matthew without reading, consulting Mark, you would think they saw that fig tree that it withered immediately, just went, meow, and that was it. And they were there visibly and could see it. But we know it happened over the course of a day. Still, the fact that a fully functioning plant in full bloom dies in a day is miraculous. I mean, it started dying right then, but that's what Matthew stresses, is the fact that when Jesus spoke, it happened. That this became real right then. Six, as Francis observed, either event would have to be considered miraculous, since healthy, full-grown trees do not wither in a single day. I mean, that just doesn't happen. You might begin to see a tree in distress. That's a possibility. But it won't be completely dead within a 24-hour period. There's no way. Well, seven, however, the fact that Mark desired to emphasize that the fig tree began to die at the sound of Jesus' words. While Mark provides the accurate chronology of the event and desires to tie the event to the events of the temple, Mark has a different purpose in his writing. And so therefore he puts this in here, in fact, in a little more chronologically correct sense, because he's interweaving this with the temple incident and wants people to see the relationship between the two. Well, the order of events is then pretty easily ascertained. A, Jesus approached the fig tree on Tuesday morning while making the journey from Bethany into Jerusalem. B, his command of the tree is interpreted by Peter and probably the others as a curse on an otherwise healthy plant. See, the fig tree began to wither immediately from the root. But first, you would never see that because you couldn't see the root system. You wouldn't know that by looking at the tree. But the effects were not noticed by anyone observing it at that time. D, the group spends all day Tuesday in Jerusalem and departs as the sun is setting and passes by the fig tree when it is dark enough not to be seen. And again, maybe they could see the tree, but they wouldn't have seen the effects of it necessarily. Wouldn't have stood out to them. And plus, by the end of the day, you know what? They're probably tired. They're probably not all that worried about it. And you know, as you get to the end of your day, sometimes, you know, you can go on autopilot. And I've been astonished that people ask me, well, do you know where that such and such thing is? But I drive by every day. Mm-hmm. No. because sometimes you're just not paying attention. You're intent on what you're doing. And if they were leaving Bethany to go eat, or for Bethany, and they were hungry, well, they wouldn't have been paying that much of attention. And then on Wednesday morning, they leave Bethany as the sun is rising, and they make the trip into Jerusalem. And as they make the trip, rather, the tree is visible to them for the first time since Jesus cursed it. And again, applying the language that Peter uses to the event, because Jesus doesn't correct him. And essentially, he did curse it in that sense, although he didn't use the language of cursing. He didn't say, may God strike you dead. That's the language of cursing. He just said, he dealt with it in terms of fruit. Because that's what he wants these people to see, and that's certainly Mark's purpose in here, is to see that the temple is now producing no fruit. Just like the fig tree didn't produce fruit, neither did the temple. The fruit that God sought, which is engaged in the real worship of God. And I was reading, it was funny, I was reading an account about somebody who was, quote, critiquing a doctrinal ministry, which the guy was pretty even-handed, I'd have to say. It wasn't horrible, it wasn't a hatchet job, which some people will do. But he said, you know, there's a good emphasis on teaching, but you have to blend teaching with other factors like worship. Well, what is worship? He doesn't define what worship is. I presume he means singing and taking offerings. And all of that, and listening to the choir, K-W-O-I-R. That's what he has seemed to mean by, immediately when I read that, I thought to myself, what Mark had said, or what Jesus had said in Mark, in chapter 7, when he said to him, you are not worshiping me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the precepts of men. He acknowledged that they were worshiping him by teaching doctrines. They were just teaching the wrong ones. So worship largely consists of teaching of the truth. But this is written by a fundy of sorts. And so their ideas of what worship is and what actual worship is very different. And so I agree, you've got to have time for other things. Obviously, we're not going to have 7 Bible classes or 10 Bible classes a week. Good Lord, you've got to have time to assimilate, to reflect, to apply the doctrine that you've learned, and put it into practice. You got to have that. So, again, teaching has to be done in balance. And that was kind of his point, which I understand what he was getting at. That there has to be a balance between the time to teach and the time to fulfill other functions of the Christian way of life. And, of course, he had to have in there evangelism. So we're going to start an evangelism deal now on Friday. No, we're not. I'm kidding. And everybody is forced to attend. No, I'm kidding again. We're not going to do that. But I don't see evangelism as being an organized function like the fungies do. I see evangelism as something that every believer should be doing as is appropriate to his niche. And as his appropriate interest is expressed, every chance he gets. You should be alert to these opportunities and take them. But again, we're not here to headbutt people and cram the truth down their throats. We're going to teach it. It's going to be available, but whether they get it or not, that's up to them. Well, 9, what is clear from Mark's account is that the tree was alive and apparently thriving on Tuesday. And by Wednesday morning, it was barren, leafless, and obviously dead. And 30, the use of the prepositional phrase, from the roots, emphasizes the fact that the death began with the roots first and spread upward through the entire tree. And 11, the language of a tree withering from the roots upward is often found in the context of the wicked, and their rejection of sound doctrine. It is often used to emphasize the totality of the destruction. Let's look at Job 18. Now, no doubt here, and these are words by Bildad, one of Job's good friends that came to help him in his time of need. So all these words have to be read at some level, knowing, you know, the context in which they were uttered. But these guys are out of fellowship because they've misjudged God and they've misjudged Job. And so they're out of fellowship, but they're trying to give Job the doctrine. Well, that's what you really want. It's a bunch of people out of fellowship trying to sit around and discuss doctrine. It doesn't work very well. So Job 18:5, indeed, the light of the wicked goes out, and the flame of his fire gives no light. The tent of the wicked is darkened, and his lamp goes out above him. His vigorous stride is shortened, and his own scheme brings him down. This is one of the natures of people when they get under their sin nature, whether they're believers or unbelievers. Now, he's dealing with the wicked. He's dealing with negative unbelievers. But people get these schemes going, and they get these plots they've concocted in their head, and they want to execute them. Well, what's the point of concocting a plot? You're not going to execute it. Not much. And the whole point is their own schemes get them into trouble because they think they're getting away with something or whatever it is. They think God doesn't see, he doesn't know, and that nobody knows. Well, guess what? Everybody eventually gets caught that pulls these kinds of stunts. And particularly, you're going to get caught if you've got an authority that's trying to do his job right. Well, and he is thrown into the net by his own feet, and he steps on the webbing. A snare seizes him by the heel, and a trap snaps shut on him. A noose for him is hidden in the ground, and a trap for him on the path. All around, terrors frighten him and harry him at every step. His strength is famished. His calamity is ready at his side. His skin is devoured by disease. The firstborn of death devours his limbs. Well, I think Solomon would take offense to some of this. Because he would say, now that's not true in every case. This is not always, if Ecclesiastes taught me anything, it's that things don't always happen the way you might expect them to. And while these, it's generally true that God is against the wicked. There's no doubt about that. The scriptures make no secret of it. But to assume that God's going to do this to every wicked person is way overstating the case. But again, Bildad and these other guys are out of fellowship. But this is probably their view of things. And it's very simplistic, and it doesn't necessarily always happen this way. He is torn from the security of his tent, and they march before him, the king of terrors. There dwells in his tent nothing of his. Brimstone is scattered on his habitation. His roots are dried below, and his branch is cut off above. Memory of him perishes from the earth, and he has no name abroad. And that was the point I wanted to get at here. We don't need to read the rest of this. But this idea of his roots are dried up and his branch is cut off. Also Isaiah 5:24. Oh, I know what it was. And I think I maybe had announced it earlier, but in case I didn't. For those we are looking at, for those who want to use touch screen technology, we don't have any problem with you using that for Bible class if you would rather use electronic media, as long as you're not tapping on a keyboard while I'm trying to teach. You can use an iPad or whatever, you know, you might like to use. So that was my other thing I was trying to think of. And I think I'd announced that before, but just to remind you. Isaiah 5:24, therefore as the tongue of fire consumes stubble and dry grass collapses into the flame, so their root will become like rot, and their blossom blow away as dust. For they have rejected the law of the Lord of hosts, and have despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. And again, you very much get into these things, and you look at the situations that these prophets are talking about, and it's related to a rejection of certain doctrines. That's what the bottom line is for these people. Their rejection of doctrine is going to get them into trouble with God. And they think they're going to get away with it. Well, guess what? God's going to put everybody's feet to the fire over all of this. Everybody, all the doctrine you learn will be tested, and you will either apply it or you won't. And the fact is, God does not, but of course we emphasize in some ways what wasn't emphasized in, quote, the doctrinal movement for years, and that is that it doesn't end with intake and belief, that application is the goal of all of this. The goal of our instruction is for you to apply the doctrine that you've learned. And that's our goal, love from a pure heart. Ezekiel 17:9. And he talks about here a vine being, in this case it's a vine. Well, thus says the Lord God, will it thrive? Will he not pull up its roots and cut off its fruit so that it withers? And neither by great strength nor by many people can it be raised from its roots again. Behold, though it is planted, will it thrive? Will it not completely wither as soon as the east wind strikes it? And very often the term wind is used in scriptures in a general sense to refer to various judgments, various things that happen. And in many cases, it's judgments from God. Hosea 9, 15 through 17. All their evil is at Gilgal. Indeed, I came to hate them there. Because of the wickedness of their deeds, I will drive them out of my house. I will love them no more. And all their princes are rebels. Ephraim is stricken. Their root is dried up. They will bear no fruit, even though they bear children. I will slay the precious ones of their womb. My God will cast them away because they have not listened to him. And they have become wanderers among the nations. And Malachi 4:1. And I always think of Malachi 4:1. When I'm out in the yard pulling weeds. And the importance of destroying weeds is that you got to get the root. And so this verse always goes through my head when I'm out there doing it. I don't do it very much like I should, but such is life. Therefore, behold, the day is coming, burning like a furnace, and all the arrogant and every evildoer will be chaff. And that day is coming that will set them ablaze, says the Lord of the armies, so that it will leave them neither root nor branch. Complete destruction. That's the whole idea of destroying something from the root, is complete and utter destruction. Well, some interpreters have missed the point of withering from the root, since they see the tree as Israel in general. And again, there's applications to Israel at large, but I believe in Mark you really have to say that the focus is on the temple. And what's going on there? Now, that impacts Jerusalem. That impacts Israel. Of course it does. But I think the primary focus on the fig tree here is the temple itself. So some have missed the point. Since they see the fig tree as Israel in general and are aware of the prophetic fact that Israel has a future. So when they interpret this verse, they say, well, this only referred to a certain segment of Israel. Well, it's really aimed at the temple. And if you understand that from Mark's working here, then you don't get off on this. Romans 11, 25 through 27 does talk about Israel's future. We know they have one. The elect in Israel, at any rate. The remnant, as we call them. Romans 11, 25. For I do not want you to be, brethren, to be uninformed of this mystery, so that you will not be wise in your own estimation. That a partial hardening has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come in. In other words, essentially, of course, Jews are everybody that's not Gentiles, and Gentiles are everybody that's not Jews. And essentially what God does is he has set up in his plan a way to harvest the positive volition among the Gentile nations, and that's who we are. This is a part of all of that. And that goes on largely through the church age. It's not as though Gentiles will not be harvested. It's not as though some Gentiles didn't believe during the age of Israel. They did. And when dispensationally we close the church age and return to the age of Israel, the final 7 years of Daniel's 70th week, Gentiles will still be harvested then too. But the primary emphasis then is going to shift back to the Jew. And So he says here, and thus all Israel will be saved. That's got to be qualified. The elect part of Israel, the remnant, will be saved. Not the entire nation. Negative Jews are not going to be saved any more than negative Gentiles. As it is written, the deliverer will come from Zion. He will remove ungodliness from Jacob. And verse 28 is one of the key things here. From the standpoint of the gospel, They are enemies for your sake. They're enemies of the truth. They're enemies of the gospel. And this works out fine for Gentiles because God opens the plan up. I mean, this was always his plan, essentially. But the Jews didn't know this. This was one of those mysteries that God was going to unite Jew and Gentile into one body in the church. That was a part of that mystery doctrine. But from the standpoint of God's choice, they are beloved for the sake of the fathers. For the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable. And so, just as you once were disobedient to God, and now have been shown mercy because of their disobedience, so these also now have been disobedient, that because of the mercy shown to you, they may also now be shown mercy. So God has shut up all under disobedience. So we're not have any false ideas here, so that he may show mercy to all. Again, the may depends upon the individual volition of the person. Are they going to accept it? Well, 13, thus some suggest that the tree did not wither from the roots. They just kind of reject that because they think that destroys the analogy. Well, if you understand that the focus is on the temple, it doesn't destroy the analogy because the temple was not, had not been, and never will produce the fruit that God's looking for until the millennium. The temple still won't produce the fruit even after it's reestablished. Now, there is some question. Obviously, we don't know. I don't know. I don't think I've got any definitive proof that I can say. And so there are differences of opinion among sound interpreters even over the timing of the rebuilding of the temple. Does the temple go up before the rapture or after? And I don't see anything that tells me either way. Now, if I see him start building it, psych! I'm ready. Because that means we're definitely not far off. But maybe they'll throw it up after the rapture. We don't know. We've given technology and the fact that we know they have all this stuff ready. They're ready to go. They could probably throw it up in a matter of months. But then, again, it's still not going to produce the fruit that God's looking for. So what will ultimately happen? It will ultimately become the seed of Antichrist. You talk about not producing the fruit. This is the opposite of what God would want. So again, some suggest that the tree did not wither from the roots. They say, but the actual Greek of this is so plain to me, I don't know how you could claim to be an exegete at all and not understand when he said from the roots, it's the preposition ek with the ablative of frizo, the word for root. And typically, ek means out of. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't some overlap, I understand. But typically, this is what ek represents. So here's the roots. Here's the external tree out here, and it withered starting here at the root. And, of course, that's really the best way to wither a tree if you think about it. And that's exactly what Jesus did. So they indicate, and I've had, and I otherwise do solid work, but I've seen them fall all over themselves on certain little verses like this. I don't know why. The text here is very plain. It's not ambiguous. If you don't believe me, you can ask Pete. It's not ambiguous here what it says. It's strange. So they say that the roots remained unharmed. Well, how can you say that from what it said here? I do not understand that. And that the only portion of the tree that was affected was the portion of it that was above ground. Well, guess what? That's just wrong. It's absolutely, completely wrong, and the text shows you it's wrong. So 14, the fig tree, in Mark's context, should more properly be understood as a figure for the temple and the religious leadership of Israel, which had become corrupt, and that system was judged by God as being irretrievably broken. There's no fixing this. There's no compromising with these people and getting this right. Once they go negative, typically they're never coming back. That is just the way it works. That is the rule. 99 times out of 100. Once they go negative, they will not humble themselves and come back. Because going negative is a function of arrogance. There's just no doubt about that. And these men were so eaten up at this point, the leadership in there in the temple and all of that and his practices, were so distorted that it was gone. There was no way to fix this. It was irretrievable in that sense. So again, if you understand this as a figure for the temple, then the difficulty is removed when it withers from the roots up because, again, the temple is the problem. And in fact, point 15, the temple under Jewish unbelief had not been bearing fruit, the fruit God sought for some time. and will never bear the fruit God seeks until the kingdom of Messiah is established. Luke 13, 6 and 7. And this little parable essentially is designed to portray, in some ways, the ministry of Christ is offered to Israel during the first Advent. A man had a fig tree which had been planted in his vineyard, and he came looking for fruit on it and did not find it. And he said to the vineyard keeper, "Behold, for 3 years I have come looking for fruit on this fig tree without finding any." Well, in a sense, I believe that would correspond to the 3 years of public ministries beginning in 30 AD when he showed up there at the temple. And then now, here we are in 33 AD, and he's looked for fruit for these 3 years and he can't find any. Nothing is acceptable here. So he says, "Cut it down. Why did it even use up the ground?" And he answered and said to him, he obviously is his vineyard keeper, said to the owner, "Let it alone, sir, for this year too, until I dig around it and put in fertilizer. And if it bears fruit next year, fine. But if not, cut it down." And that is designed to teach, of course, the nature of the mercy and patience of God in giving the Jews every opportunity to get their act together. And yet they won't. They don't. You can extend grace to people forever, certain people, and they're never going to respond. It just doesn't matter. Matthew 21, 43 also. Therefore I say to you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people producing the fruit of it. And that people is the church. But as the church winds down, as we know, all the prophecies, 2 Timothy 3 coming together, all the prophecies about the last days coming together with 2 Peter and Jude, coming together with the Laodicean era of the church age. And we see that the church, unfortunately, is on the downward side of this, just like the Jews were at this point in their history, failing to produce the fruit that God wants because they're not committed to the sound teaching of the truth. They're not committed to the entire process. And whatever they do, if they're not committed to the entire process, it'll never be successful, ultimately. Whatever the breakdown may be, whether they're not teaching, whether they're not assembling under face-to-face, whether they're not applying faith toward the doctrine, whether they're not applying it, whatever it is, ultimately, the fruit's going. The church is not behaving effectively the way God wants it to. Okay, well, we're going to have to stop there today. This is our month to observe the Lord's table. So we'll go ahead and take a break here and stop right there and get everything in place for that. You know, I realize...